Hello and welcome to Live from the Dark Room. My name is Andy Henderson and I am so glad that you're joining us this week. I get to sit down with Matt Murphy, who is one of my photography heroes. I'm so excited for you to listen to this conversation. But before we get into it, you can follow along with the show at Andy Henderson on Instagram. You can also follow Matt at MurphyMade on Instagram or MurphyMade.com. So without further ado, let's just get into the show. Hello and welcome to Live from the Dark Room. My name is Andy Henderson. I am so glad that you're joining us today. I get to sit down. I'm chatting today with Matt Murphy. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Hi, how's it going?
Going so well. I'm so glad you're joining us today. Matt is a phenomenal photographer, does a lot of work for Broadway, does a lot of work for a lot of different people, including the Postal Service, right?
Yeah, apparently now I'm shooting stamps. Who knew?
I love that. I want to get into that. But before we do, I just wanted to kind of talk a little bit about our connection, kind of how we got to know each other and how we got to this point, recording a podcast episode together.
Yeah, the journey so far.
I think I was a junior in college and I sent you an email. I've been a fan of your work forever. I mean, really, since I learned about, you know, Broadway photography. If you know anything about Broadway or Broadway photography, you've seen Matt's work. It is phenomenal. It's everywhere and it's gorgeous. And we'll get into that too. But I sent you an email and I didn't know if you would respond. I sent you an email and I was just like, hey, I've just got some questions. Would you mind answering them? I think I asked you like four questions and you sent a response pretty quick and it was like just these long detailed answers. And I was just so like overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, he responded to me. Like he actually took time out of his day to, you know, respond. And that really meant so much to me. It really meant the world to me.
Ooh, I'm so glad I passed the test. I'm glad that I responded. I'm glad that I was on top of my emails at that time.
I mean, honestly, it really did make a world of difference. And just like, my confidence, and also, you know, I was at that point trying to move to New York and get into the photography world. And, you know, there were a lot of photographers that I reached out to and definitely not all of them responded. And so, again, I just want to say thank you for that. But also that is kind of how we first started chatting back and forth. And then, you know, we followed each other on Instagram and now it's to the point where we just kind of, you know, we comment on each other's work and send each other the hearts and the clapping
exactly,
emojis.
All the support. I mean, I just remember following you and I remember getting that first email and being so impressed by your work. And one, you know, the piece of advice that I give to everybody in this business, whenever I get emails that are kind of like, how can I get started? What's the best way to break into it? I always just say to people, send out some cold emails. The worst thing that can happen is that somebody doesn't respond. The best thing that can happen is some new career opportunity falls into your lap because you just never know when it's going to be the right place, right time. You know, who's looking for an assistant, who needs extra hands on a set the next day. You know, it can play in your favor so unexpectedly. And so I was just excited that you had done that. I was excited that you were persistent about it and that you came to New York. And it's wild to see how fast. I mean, I think you were here for only about a year, right? And
yeah.
I feel like in that year, you made such a mark and did so much incredible portrait work with so many people. And I just, every time I would log on to Instagram, I'd be like, you know, my thumb would stop and I'd be like, oh, of course it's an Andy, you know, it's Andy's portrait. Great.
I feel like a little overwhelmed because honestly, your work has been such an inspiration to me and to my work and how I want to pose people and your use of movement and dance. And it's just all just so phenomenal that like, I feel like very, very grateful to have met you and learned about your work through that. But yeah, I just wanted to say, thank you for that.
And I am so grateful for your support because I really am. And I appreciate it. And I'm happy to, you know, get to follow you and can't wait to see your work and it's all so exciting.
Absolutely. And now, you know, things are starting back up a little bit again, and things are getting, you know, I don't want to say normal, but, you know, we're starting to shoot again a little bit at a time. And I know you're starting to, you came back to start working again a little bit, and I want to talk about that. But before we get started, I want to ask you something that I ask everybody at the beginning of every episode, which is, if you had to use one lens for the rest of your life and only one lens, what would it be and why?
You know, I think I'm gonna give an answer that is not gonna surprise you, but I think it might surprise some other photographers that are listening. And I don't think that anybody said it yet, but I would have to say the 70 to 200 2.8.
Yeah.
There's no other lens that I find myself using more consistently. I use it for everything. I use it for headshot work. I use it all the time in theater work. You know, whenever I'm shooting a show, I have minimum two bodies and minimum two lenses.
Yeah.
And so I always have the 24 to 70 and I always have the 70 to 200. And I just find that both of them are so sharp, but there's just something about the 70 to 200 and the way that it, you know, the depth of the focus and all of the way that it kind of shapes the space for me as a theater photographer is really exciting, because it allows me to kind of pick and choose how much I want to show and what I want to obscure and what I want to highlight. And I find it to just be incredibly versatile, and the image quality is always just so beautiful. So it's also just in low light, it's so fast. It's
absolutely
pretty magical.
Yeah.
So I think that's final answer, 70 to 200 F2.8.
Final answer. Ding, ding, ding. Yeah,
final
I completely understand that. And I love that lens too. Like you, I use that lens for headshots a lot. And when I was shooting more theater, I mean, more in college, actual performances, that was one of my go-tos. And you just can't beat it. I mean, I feel like for what you do a lot, that would have to be the answer, because if you could only use one, I mean, going to be kind of hard to shoot a whole show with a 24 to 70.
Yeah, you would just, I would find that it wouldn't give me as much versatility as I would like in the final product. It would be really nice to say, you know, the older I get, now that I'm not a kid anymore, the older I get, the more I'm like, oh God, if I used a lighter lens, I would save my shoulders and my back so much pain, because I am in far more discomfort, I feel like, as a photographer than I ever was when I was a dancer. And so
I think
the 70 to 200 probably is a little bit responsible for that. But, you know, just got to keep doing shoulder exercises, got to keep getting ready for theater to come back and have everything back in shape so that I can actually hold that lens for 2.5 hours during a show.
Right. Got to start doing the warm-ups so that,
exactly,
you know, when theater comes back, we can get back into it. I think a lot of us could use a little bit of some exercise every once in a while anyways. I think my arms are probably not ready to go back to holding a camera for hours at a time. So maybe I should take that advice and start doing that as well.
Exactly. I mean, I've been back on set now, you know, a fair amount since September, I would say. And I still find that just physically I'm getting myself kind of back into shape. And it's something that a lot of people never really think about when you think about photography as a career, is that it actually is pretty physically demanding, especially if you're doing any type of event photography where you're having to, you know, if I'm shooting a show, I can't put the camera down or I'm going to miss something super important. So I'm holding that lens for 2.5 hours.
Absolutely.
I have to take a lot of care with, you know, making sure I do acupuncture and get my body worked on so that I actually can do my job.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a conversation that I had recently with one of my close friends that I shoot and used to shoot a lot of weddings together with. We both have been shooting weddings for probably 8 years. Is that, you know, when you're a wedding photographer, you're on your feet all day, sometimes up to 10, 11 hours a day, carrying all of your equipment, you know, setting up lights, holding the, like you said, holding the lenses for that amount of time, it really does start to take a toll on your body. And I think that's something really interesting that, like you said, no one really thinks about it. No one really talks about it. How physically demanding photography can be as a job. So I definitely think that's super interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, I always, you know, it's so lopsided too. Like, I'm always holding the camera with the same arm. You're not doing anything symmetrically. So it really, you have to come up with a good self-care regime, because it's going to come back to bite you. As someone older now, I will say it will come back. It will come back to bite you if you don't start, you know, working it into your routine from a young age.
All right. I'm going to start now. Got to get on it. Can you talk a little bit about a project that you have worked on, led, shot, that you were really proud of? It doesn't have to be recent. It can be the first photo shoot you ever did. I just am really curious to know about something that you've worked on that you're really proud of.
Yeah, you know, I think I feel very fortunate to have a lot of pride for a lot of the work that me and my team have done over the past decade now, I guess. And the thing that really pops into my brain that I feel was like so indicative of kind of who I am as a photographer and what I stand for and the type of work that I love to do is this series that I created for Broadway.com, which is called Gotta Dance. Mm. And it started really earlier in my career because, you know, their editor-in-chief, Paul Wontorek, he was one of the very first people that when I was starting out gave me such a platform and such an opportunity that truly I probably wasn't ready for. You know, I was so young at that point, and I think he just took a chance on me. It was one of those great moments of like right place, right time. He had this idea for wanting to highlight ensemble dancers of shows, because I think so often a lot of the editorial work that goes out on websites for the theater community really focuses on the stars and the people who are, you know, above the title and who are selling the tickets. Sure. Essentially. But they're not like really, sometimes they're not the engine of the show, right? Mm-hmm. The ensemble is the engine of the show. And so as someone who was a ballet dancer and was in the core of a ballet company for a long time, I just always felt it was part of my journey as a photographer to shine as much of a spotlight on the kind of unsung heroes of a show, which to me really is the ensemble dancers. So we started this series for Broadway.com in, I think, 2012. It's been almost 10 years now. And sure, we started it with kind of individual shoots of, you know, our first one that we did was Shannon Lewis, who is this, you know, icon of the Broadway community. Mm. And we started doing these individual shoots, which were all really fun. We would kind of style them to be a kind of representative of the show that they were in. And we were going for these kind of like Broadway gypsies, you know, these people that were the kind of titans of their field at that point.
Yeah.
And it slowly started to evolve into this thing where the press reps would get excited about it. And somewhere along the way, we got the idea of, okay, what if we started shooting like more than one person from a show? What if we shot six dancers from a show? Or what if we shot, you know, 12 dancers from a show? And they just kind of kept ballooning and ballooning and ballooning. And they were an incredible test of stamina for me, of creative vision, of collaboration, of fitting within budgets. You know, it was all of these things that it was such an incredible crash course. And when I look back on some of the bigger shoots that we did, where we did like the entire ensemble of Great Comet, which was, I think, 24 people.
Yeah.
You know, we shot 24 dancers in about 6 hours, and we did all these different combinations. I've set, you know, sometimes on shoots like that, I'll set an intention for myself or a kind of parameter so that I can actually succeed. Because I think if I don't set any parameters for myself and I'm just like, oh, it's a giant open room and there's so much opportunity for all these different things I can play with, then I can't make a first step in the right direction. So I was like, I'm going to shoot all these 24 dancers. I'm going to use one light, one huge modifier, and get as much variety as we can out of that. So that one in particular really sticks out to me as like a huge moment of pride for kind of everything that it represented. I've loved that series. I don't know if we'll do it again. I don't know if its time has kind of come and gone now that we've kind of entered into this new era of Broadway.
Sure.
But it's something that I look back on really fondly, and I am glad that I got the chance to showcase all those dancers.
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds like an incredible project. And I now I'm like dying to see some of these photos if I haven't already, and I'm sure I have. that just, it sounds really interesting. And it sounds too like you have been able to work in a lot of really interesting locations. I know just from following you for the past few years, you've worked in some really cool places and really cool sets, but is there one that sticks out to you, that's kind of like your dream location, dream shoot location, or I mean, not necessarily dream, but one that really sticks out to you as being such a cool place to shoot in?
If we're talking about the Gotta Dance series in particular with the location, I think I did a shoot for the Ensemble of American in Paris, which was really fun for so many reasons. One, I was working on that show already, so I knew them decently, but because of my dance background and because of the age of the ensemble in that show, so many of the people that were in that show were actually peers of mine that I had come up through all of the dance schools with. So it was kind of this incredible reunion where we were all like, oh my God, look at us. We're not 15 and in a summer program anymore. We're, you know, at a photo shoot for a Broadway show, and how cool that we all, this is maybe different than what we envisioned when we were kids, but how beautiful that it is different and wonderful and surprising. And so that shoot was at this incredible location that actually, I'd be curious to know if you ever shot a wedding there. It's called the Metropolitan Building. And it's actually from my studio in Long Island City right now, I can see it. And so I always look out at it and I'm always like, oh my gosh, remember that incredible day where we went in, we rented this floor that was basically, it's essentially like a prop house almost, this floor that we were working on. And so it's got rows of these crazy chairs and rows of, you know, just stuff that if you're not a photographer, you'd come in and just kind of be like, oh, it's just a storage room. But I think any photographer that walks in there is like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And it just, it's, you have to do, you kind of just have to get out of your own way and let the location speak for itself because it's so stunning.
I am looking up pictures of it right now and it looks absolutely gorgeous.
It's nuts. And it's just one of those, it was one of those moments where the kind of everything clicked for the vision that we had for that shoot in particular. And we had them in these incredible gowns. And, you know, my stylist, David Withrow, is like, had these huge Austin Scarlett gowns with these dancers in them. And in the middle of this kind of dilapidated location, to have the kind of pristine vision of these of these ensemble members in these very tailored looks, it just all clicked, I think. And that was, I think, one of my all-time favorite locations. The other thing that pops into my head, and this is to be very long-winded, the other thing that pops into my head was I have been super, super fortunate, and I have always been thankful for this, but I have never been more thankful for this than in the pandemic. I got to travel such a like stunning amount of different places when I was working, and it's something that I kind of am like, I have no clue how I lucked into that doorway opening where I got to travel a lot, but I did get to go to Australia for a couple of different shows that I was shooting. And one of the times that I was there, we got to shoot the cast of a West Side Story production that was launching in front of the Sydney Opera House.
Oh, wow.
And that was a true moment where I could not believe how lucky. I just couldn't, like, I just kind of zoomed out and I was like, if the kid version of myself could see, not only am I in Australia, which is wild on its own, but I'm in front of this iconic landmark that is even more jaw-dropping in person, shooting promo for a show that I've loved since I was a kid. You know, it was such a pinch me moment.
Yeah.
And it was one of those rare locations in the world where you think that it must be overhyped. You're like, there's no way it's that cool in person. There's no way it looks as neat as it does in every photo that we've seen. And somehow it's like so much more impressive in person and so much cooler looking. And so I had to just kind of slap myself and be like, okay, take a second, be excited about it, and then get to work. Like, you gotta, because it's a whole mess of lighting obstacles at that location too. So
sure.
Okay. I was like, keep it going.
Wow. That sounds incredible. Man, I would absolutely love to shoot there. Are you kidding me? That's so cool.
It was nuts, yeah.
I mean, listen, you talked a little bit about your dance background, but can you get into that a little bit more at the beginning, and I'd love for you to kind of take that and, if possible, talk about that and then transition into your photography journey through that and then talk a little bit about where it's taken you and where you are and everything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I moved to New York City when I was 17, and I came here to join American Ballet Theater, and I had come right out of high school. I had been focused so, you know, as you have to be, I was so laser focused on my ballet career. And so I came here to join ABT, did that, loved it, felt so fortunate, you know, again, kind of kid in the candy store moment where you're like, I'm 17 and I'm around all of these unbelievable dancers that I used to have their posters on my wall in my dorm. Like, how am I now taking company class next to these people? You know, and I always have, I know that you talked a little bit about this on one of your previous episodes, but I am like the king of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I constantly am like, oh my God, how did I get here? Like, what, this isn't right. Like, what's going on? And so I think for a lot of my ballet career, I was existing with that. I was simultaneously so excited and also kind of like, what is this world? What am I doing? This is wild. But I had been so focused on it, and I basically was touring all the time, dancing nonstop. You know, I started back in that time period, blogs were huge. And so I was like, I'm going to start a blog. And that really became the kind of tiny little inkling of a photography career. Was basically, I started this blog as a behind the scenes look at American Ballet Theater. And I was like, I'm going to document stuff on the road. I got a kind of basic Olympus point and shoot to start, and was on tour, just snapping whatever I could.
Yeah.
And I started to get a lot of feedback on just the, at that point, I think not many people were showing a lot of access to, you know, this was pre-social media, all of that. No one was really showing access behind the scenes of a big company like that. So I kind of just did it and decided to ask forgiveness, not permission, if I ever got in trouble for posting things.
Sure.
And we toured a ton. I took a lot of photos there, and this is like a wah-wah Debbie Downer moment for a second, but it all ends well, I promise. Spoiler alert. Basically, when I turned 21, I had been in like the absolute best shape of my life. I was feeling great, and I came back from a tour, and I felt a little bit off. I just wasn't really sure what was going on physically. I felt like I was maybe getting sick or something. And I started to get a little bit worse, and I remember calling my mom, and I was like, I think I maybe have mono. Like, I don't really know what's going on, but I imagine this is what mono feels like, because I just feel so tired. Mm. And basically, I like had that conversation, woke up a couple days later, and could not get out of bed. Like, was just completely, completely incapable of really doing anything. I was totally a zombie. And it began this really kind of terrifying and ultimately wonderful, but at the time I could not see that, shift in my careers. I woke up sick and was dealing with chronic mono essentially for 2 years. Wow. I had 2 years where I was like trying to get back in shape, trying to get better, trying to be, you know, back in the company. And just every time I would try, something would fail again. And I would be dealing with another kind of health crisis. And that led me to, I was like, I have no energy. I have no like creative outlet at all. I feel crazy. I'm in my apartment on 8th Street, just like losing my mind, ordering Netflix DVDs, because at the time you actually got them sent to you.
Right.
You know, going through like Grey's Anatomy seasons. And I was like, I just need something to do. So I was like, you know what? I have like $800 in savings or something. And I was like, I'm going to go on Amazon. I didn't even research anything. I literally was just like, what is a good camera? I think, yeah, I probably typed something like that. I was like, what's a good camera? And literally I got a Canon 30D and like a kit lens. And I said, you know, I'm going to go and start to shoot. So I took it into rehearsal studios. I started to photograph as much around the company as I could, and really started to teach myself how to photograph using these incredible world-class dancers that were at my disposal. So that basically started, this is so long-winded.
No, please.
But that basically started me realizing like, oh, I don't have to do what I said I was going to do when I was 13. you know, when I was 13, I can go ahead and decide that maybe I'm done with my dance career now. And maybe this is all telling me that I'm supposed to be a photographer, and I'm just going to kind of knock on every door that I can and follow every lead that I can. And so I took a whole slew of odd jobs. I literally was like, as we all do, right? I mean, I'm mm-hmm. sure you had a million crazy photography jobs when you first started.
Sure.
And so I basically was like taking every odd job that I could. And somehow along the way, I ended up getting connected with Broadway Bears, which is, you know, a photographer's dream. It's literally the most beautiful people in the world with the craziest concert lighting grid you've ever seen.
Right.
Tons of haze, like, you know, this benefit concert that they do.
More haze.
More haze, exactly. It's this benefit concert that they do every June. And so I got asked to photograph that, I think just based on some of the dance work that I was doing. And started that, got connected with Jerry Mitchell because he is, you know, he created Broadway Bears.
Yeah.
And we had only really met peripherally a tiny bit at that point. But I'm a crazy person. And as we were saying at the beginning, when we were talking about cold emailing people, I was in LA not too long after shooting Broadway Bears. And I saw that Jerry was in town and he was doing Hairspray at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what, I'm going to just email him out of the blue, like a crazy 23-year-old does, and I'm going to just say, hey, Jerry Mitchell, I don't know if you remember me, but, like, I'm in town, and can I come photograph this giant production of Hairspray? And I have no clue what I was thinking, but I am so grateful for being young and far braver than I ever would be today. And he literally emailed back right away and was like, oh my God, great. Yeah, come meet me at the stage door tomorrow at 2:00 and you can shoot the press rehearsal.
Wow.
And I was like, huh? Okay. And so I still to this day don't have a driver's license. So I have just never learned. And so my in-laws, who are incredible, my husband's parents in California, they were like, we'll drive you to the Hollywood Bowl. We'll take you there. So they drove me. They dropped me off. I went in. And I shot this unbelievable production of Hairspray, thinking, like, life never is going to get any better than this. This is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me. And I sent Jerry all the photos afterwards, literally just doing it kind of as a favor, just for fun. And he wrote back and I said something along the lines of, like, wow, these are so wonderful. Like, I really want to try to get you on my next show.
Wow.
And I was like, huh?
I'm sorry, what?
Okay. Yeah, like, just frame that for my wall, and, like, okay, I'm done now. And so, like, literally, I think a year later, I was just kind of, you know, beside myself, thought it was never going to get better than that. And a year later, he emails me, and he's like, hey, I don't know if you remember that I had said that I wanted to try to get you on my next show. And I was like, yeah, Jerry, like, I remember that.
Of course, I framed it.
Of course, exactly. And he was like, so I'm working on this new show, and I'm going to try to pitch it to the producers, and I just need, like, a portfolio, and I need all of the info that you can try to persuade them with. And he was like, it's this new show called Kinky Boots.
Wow.
And that is literally, like, he pushed so hard for me to get on that show. He put me in front of the producers who changed my life, in front of the press team that changed my life. He literally, I cannot say enough. I've said it to him many times before, but I can never stop thanking him enough, because if he had not opened that one door for me, and if that show had not become what it was, I have no clue what my life would be. I truly think that that is a door that could have stayed closed to me forever, and the fact that he opened it is something that I will never be able to repay him for, and I am just endlessly grateful that I sent a cold email.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically, that's the very long-winded way of how I got from being a dancer to being a photographer for Broadway, and had at that point literally, like, laughably no idea what I was doing.
That was just phenomenal. I love that story so much. That is so interesting too. And, like, I also, I mean, I'm sure you know this too, but, like, I think, you know, you need to, like, give yourself, like, props too, and a big pat on the back for sending that email. Because, yeah, like you said, like, I would never have the courage to do that today. Like, even now, like, I feel like when I was in college, I had nothing to lose. I was just like, I'll just send everybody every email that I can possibly send. And now it's like, oh man, like, I probably shouldn't email them. I probably shouldn't, you know, like, hey, how did you get my email? Like, but that is such an incredible story. And that is just like, wow, that kind of gave me chills a little bit, honestly.
it's I still kind of can't believe it. And I mean, don't you think though, at that age, you do have a kind of like wonderful sense of delusion? Like,
yes.
You're kind of like, my portfolio, I took a lot of really cool photos. Like, my portfolio is awesome. And
uh-huh.
You look back and you're like, wait, I submit that portfolio, huh?
Right.
And you just have to hope that the people that you're sending it to are one, kind, and two, can kind of like see the enthusiasm. Because I think that's really what it was for me, was that they saw a lot in me that I think I didn't necessarily see in myself.
Mm.
And I am very, very grateful to every single person involved in Kinky Boots for teaching me. I mean, every single step of that show was such a learning experience.
Sure.
And every single person involved deserves a huge amount of thanks from me for being patient and kind.
Wow. That is so great. And now, you know, we're here, and I mean, you know, 2020, 2021 aside, you are photographing all the time, and you're doing all of these different shoots and all of these different shows specifically. And I think for someone listening who might not really know how it works, like, would you be willing to chat a little bit about how a shoot comes together, say, for a production? You know, some people might not know, is this something that is taken? Are these shots that I'm seeing outside and on the, you know, marquees and everywhere, is this something that is taken during a performance, or do you have the right to say start and stop during a dress rehearsal, things like that? I guess, could you go over a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, you know, it's such an interesting field, because it's just a little wild. It's like every show is kind of different, every experience is pretty different. But I'll use let's talk about like Moulin Rouge as a recent one as
great,
a kind of example of how it runs. So that show, you know, Moulin Rouge is a massive show. They know that they need a ton of imagery. They know that they need to get photographers in to document as much as they can. So my job usually starts right around the final dress rehearsals. I'll go and kind of scout the theater. I'll see the show in the rehearsal room if I can, and get as acquainted with it, get to know the creative team, so I'm not just a stranger that's walking into a very stressful environment on those final days of tech.
Right.
And then I usually show up, and when I get there, it's a final dress or the last two dress rehearsals, and I just run around like a crazy person. I have at least two lenses on me. For a show like Moulin Rouge that has something very specific where it's a really, really wide set, I had a third lens with a really wide lens on it,
mm-hmm.
Or third body with a really wide lens on it. And for that, those first couple run-throughs, I'm just kind of like following gut instinct, trying to get as much coverage as I can, trying to take stock of what I missed, trying to take stock of what I maybe got, but I know I could get better the next time. And also at the same time, I'm starting to make kind of mental notes to have conversations with the creative team and with the press team and the marketing team to discuss what we want to do for what they, in the industry, they call setups.
Mm.
Now, every show, I would say at this point, every major musical on Broadway is going to have at least one day where it's a dedicated day of a photo shoot and or B-roll video shoot. Sometimes those happen in tandem, sometimes they happen separately. You know, it's nice when they happen separately, so everybody gets their kind of ample time and no one's kind of having to step on anybody else's schedule.
Sure.
But for something like Moulin Rouge, we might come in and say, okay, we need to freeze everybody in this final tableau of a dance number where not everybody's soaked in sweat, because it's like by the right. time you get to the, you know, the by the time you get to the third, by the time you get to the end of the opening number in that show, it's like people are pretty sweaty and have been put through a like showstopper marathon in the first 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So we come back and we do something where we do setups where I will fully have control over working with the lighting designer and collaborating with the incredible stage management teams and we'll finesse costumes, we'll finesse lighting schemes, we'll sometimes completely relight something. You know, it might just be that what the eye sees is not what the camera sees, and so you have to figure out a way to make the image feel as much like the show feels, and sometimes that, you know, involves some sort of creative freedom on the photographer's part. It really depends, though, because sometimes you're really just there to document kind of archival purposes and for archival purposes, and then other times you're there to shoot for ad campaigns. So it varies a lot, but it's always an adventure, and it's always a lot of problem solving, and usually far too little time for the amount of work that everybody has to do. And so you're just kind of hoping that you have a wonderful stage manager who's keeping you on top of things, and that you have a great team of people around you who are kind of helping finesse every shot as you go, because it really does take a village.
Sure, absolutely. So I guess when we're talking about different types of shoots, let's chat a little bit about how you make, I guess, I don't actually know the exact words for these, but more promotional type photo shoots. I mean, I'm on your website now, and I'm seeing the photo of Ben Platt with the cast, or Alex Brightman turned to the side, and you know, I'm thinking of shoots like that. How do those come about? Are those typically set up and photographed at the theater, or are those in different places, or I guess does it depend?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on each show. For both of those instances, both of those actually were in tiny lobbies at the theater, where the shot of Alex Brightman and Beetlejuice was particularly fun, because that was something where, like, we came into DC, we got there that night, they were in their out-of-town tryout, and basically I have had the incredible opportunity to collaborate with Alex Timbers a lot on a couple of different shows of his.
Yeah.
And so at this point we really have a shorthand, and I think I feel extremely grateful that he seems to trust me as much as he does. Mm-hmm. And so Alex is the kind of dream collaborator to me, where he is always really, Alex Brightman and Alex Timbers are both dream collaborators, but right. This one specifically I'm saying with Timbers. He's an incredible collaborator, because as I was saying on the Great Comet shoot, it's like, I always need some parameters. I can't just be told, like, do whatever you want, because inevitably, like, that just tends to be a little problematic, where, like, someone will have some specific need for the photos that, unless it's articulated early on, you know, you'll miss the mark. And so sure. Timbers is incredible to me, because he's always very specific. He'll say kind of like, you know, I want it to be a little bit mysterious, I want it to feel kind of thrilling and exciting, but within those parameters, knock yourself out. Like, go from there, kind of take what I'm saying and interpret it and play with it and go. And so you're usually racing against time. You know, you're usually, it's a very kind of like hurry up and wait type of career path as a Broadway photographer, because, you know, with that shot of Alex, I think we were like setting up in the lobby for a couple hours and testing light for a couple hours, and thought he was going to be there, you know, 2 hours later, but then he got off for like 5 minutes on set, and they were like, okay, send Alex to the photo shoot, he's coming now. And so then all of a sudden you're like, oh god, okay, we're doing this is happening. And it is great, the longer that you're in any field, obviously you get to know everybody so much more, so on each shoot, it feels like there's more and more people on the full teams, where everyone is familiar with each other and everyone has a little bit of a shorthand.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, the older I've gotten, the more I've tried to feel confident having a voice at the table and weighing in on certain things and not being afraid to voice my opinion, especially if it is coming from a place of knowledge of knowing why something will or won't work. You know, you want to participate. And so with those shoots in particular, with the Dear Evan Hansen shoot and with the Beetlejuice shoot, I think that those were ones where I felt like everyone really coalesced and listened to each other. And I'm super proud of the way that those images turned out. And they're also both just like such phenomenal actors and so good in front of the camera that you kind of sometimes in those situations, I think that you kind of have to get out of the way as a photographer. You have to know like when to give the little pieces of advice and little bits of guidance. But with somebody like Ben Platt, you know, he is so emotionally open and so unbelievably kind of like present in front of a lens that sometimes me communicating and talking too much during the shot is actually just going to get in the way.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I think on that, I was really like just trying to let him live as Evan for a second.
Sure.
And just kind of be there and create a space where he could be vulnerable.
Wow. That is so cool. And it's so interesting as well to hear how different shoots come together in different ways. Can you tell me a little bit about, I guess, another type of shoot? I know you've worked with the Postal Service. You've done so many different things. Can you talk a little bit about a shoot or a series of photos or anything like that that you have done that doesn't have anything to do with Broadway?
It's so rare. I mean, you know, the Postal Service shoot that I did recently is actually kind of wonderful because one of the goals that I made for myself when I started out as a photographer was kind of like keep fine-tuning exactly what you want to do so that by the time you're kind of hitting your career stride, you're only really getting the type of work that you want to be doing.
Yeah.
And so much of what I do now is Broadway because I set the intention to work as a theater photographer and work as an advertising photographer specifically within the theater community.
Mm-hmm.
But what was incredible about the USPS project that came up, which is a series that's coming out in July of this year, that's of five like world-class, unbelievable tap dancers. What was so thrilling about that was that it was a little bit outside of the world that a lot of people think of me associated with now.
Sure.
But I come from a family that is all tap dancers. You know, it's literally my sister, my mom, my brother-in-law are all unbelievably talented tappers. And so I randomly just have a lot of knowledge about the tap world from growing up, going to different concerts and all of that. So when the USPS reached out and had this idea, I think it initially started as we want some photo. I mean, this was an actually incredibly open-ended kind of creative brief. It was kind of like, we want photos of tap.
Yeah.
I was like, so what do we mean by that?
Cool.
I'm not quite
Explain.
Sure what that means. Yeah. And so then it kind of fell onto me and my team to pitch something to them. I worked with an incredible art director there named Ethel Kessler. And we basically had this whole new set of challenges that I had never had to think through, which is how do you make the most dynamic image at the absolute smallest size?
Hmm.
You know, it's literally the size of a stamp. So
yeah.
You need it to be high impact as you're sorting mail. So you need it to be able, it's like, you know, on Instagram, you want somebody to be thumb stopping, but when you're sorting mail, you're kind of just like, what is actually going to stop you and grab your attention when you're doing something kind of as mindless as that? And so we were really excited about the idea of it being kind of this hyper contrasty, very colorful, movement based representation of the art form.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, worked with a couple of different people to find as many different dancers as we could that were available and eager and excited about it. And the group that we came up with, it's truly just like legends only. And this, you know, and these five people on the stamps, it's unbelievable that we got them. And it's been exciting because I think when I got the project, I of course was like, oh cool, stamps, like that's amazing. I've never gotten to do that. And that sounds really exciting. And it's a dance photo project, which is obviously up my alley.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite realize how excited people would be about the stamps. Like it has gotten more response, I would say, almost than any other project that I've done.
Wow.
Where, because I think more people than I realize collect stamps or collected stamps or have family that does. And so it became this kind of magical moment of everybody just feeling really excited about representation of an incredible American art form in something as kind of iconic as a postal stamp.
Sure. Man, that is so cool. I am so excited for that to come out. I'm definitely going to have to pick some up for sure.
Yeah. I've had so many people that are like, when are they? I've been at the post office and they're not there yet. And I'm like, they're not coming out until July. It's going to happen.
July. If you're listening to this
July.
And it's July, That's your sign.
Go get some stamps.
That is awesome. Okay. So I want to transition a little bit because, you know, we talked about basically everything, almost everything in your life up to 2020. And now we are here. It is 2021 and things are different and things have changed and things might not fully get back to the way they were. And that might not be a bad thing necessarily, but I want you to talk a little bit about how you have seen things change. Again, I know you said you've been back in the studio since about September. And so can you talk a little bit about how you've seen your work and photography work in general change? And I know that might be more of a New York City question than anywhere else, but I guess I would just like to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind when you say that is that I think it feels right now, at least, that everyone has finally kind of allowed ourselves and each other to really slow down for the first time in a very long time. Hmm. And so much of that was obviously forced. But I think that when the world shut down and we all, you know, I got to spend time with my husband for the first time in a really extended amount of time in years. I was not traveling for the first time in years. I was able to be with my dogs and our dogs we went and moved out to Beacon and we've done all of these things. And I think that it has been interesting to note how everybody has done something to shift the way that they existed in the world before. And for me, that is really just taking the time, slowing down. And even at a shoot, it's, you know, say last March, you know, March 10th, I might have had a day where I was doing 3 or 4 shoots. I might have gone from 2 headshot shoots into a show shoot that night and to editing into a key art shoot the next day. You know, I was just packing my schedule and not being as present as I now really want to set the intention to be, because I find that when, you know, it's no surprise, but when you're able to take the time and be present on set, there's a certain intimacy and excitement that happens in the photo that can't happen when it's rushed.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I think I've just been trying to take the time to breathe a little bit rather than just race to the next image or to the next setup. Or, you know, it's been fun to go back to the studio and reestablish kind of my headshot business and my promotional business for actors and performers and work one-on-one with smaller teams for a second, because so much of what I was doing before was with much larger teams and full days of, you know, 20 people on set. So to all of a sudden be spending 5 hours with 3 people, it's vulnerable and exciting in a very different way.
Definitely. And, you know, I really have enjoyed this conversation, more than you will ever know. It's really meant a ton to me. And before we go, though, I want to ask you a couple of questions. Typically, I ask things like, hey, what advice would you give to a young photographer? Whose work should they be looking at? Things like that. But I want to ask you something specific, because I love your tips. And I know that you give a lot of photography tips on Instagram. Sometimes you'll post a story and they'll have some tips. But there's one in particular that we talked about before the show. But it's the tip that you should always shoot 2 cards, back up to a second card, and never keep the cards in the same spot when you leave the shoot. And that has changed the way that I work with cards and backups and things like that. It's honestly, you know, thankfully so far, I've never had to do that. You know, it's never been something where I've, you know, been stopped and said, hey, give me your equipment. But there have been times where if that would have been the case, I would have lost all of my work for the day. And so now I try to do that every single time I shoot, and it's really helped me out. I have a lot of photographers who are just starting out or who are young, and they are always asking questions and wanting tips. So could you just give them maybe one or two of your top tips. I mean, I know that's probably one of your top ones, but one or two yeah, more, I mean, of your
shooting,
top ones.
The shooting to two cards is definitely something that once I learned that, I've spent a lot of my early career not even shooting to two cards. And once I figured that out, I was like, wait, oh my God, how have I just been like playing, you know, it feels like you were playing some crazy like Russian roulette or something.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems scary.
Right.
At that point, so like, to be like, wow, I shot an entire wedding without having two cards at some point. That is crazy to me. Or I shot a full show and then didn't like back up immediately.
Right.
I am like a stickler for backups. I am a stickler for not keeping your backups in the same place. I jokingly call them my Horcruxes.
And nice.
When I initially started doing this, and I've evolved my backup system since I was starting, but initially I would like back a bunch up. And then when I would travel to either my husband's parents or to my parents, at any point, I would always take a backup there and leave one there. Cause I was like, I'm putting my Horcruxes all around the world and like, can't possibly risk them being in the same place. So
surely no one can come places. And find them and destroy them
exactly.
all.
Exactly. The quest.
Right.
And I think one of the other things that before we were talking today, I was kind of just thinking back on like early photography idols of mine and people that I had followed a lot, kind of pre-social media a little bit. So I did a workshop at one point with Joe McNally, who is an incredible photojournalist for people who don't know him. And the kind of person where he's a legend, and you'll see his photos and you'll be like, oh, right, he's shot kind of all of these iconic images.
Yeah.
But I remember doing this workshop with him, and you know, I was just starting out and I was so nervous. And you think like, oh, once you're Joe McNally, you don't get nervous. Like that's what happens.
Yeah.
You become Joe McNally. At some point you wake up one day and you go, I'm not nervous. I know what I'm doing. I know exactly what's going on, and let's go to the shoot and be a rock star.
Yeah.
And he was so incredible because he was basically like, just so you know, I get nervous at every shoot. I get nervous the night before every shoot.
Mm.
And he said, the only thing that I get better at is problem solving.
Wow.
The nerves never go away. I just have more tools in my toolbox to use in any given situation, whether that's dealing with clients or whether that's dealing with a lighting fiasco that happens on set. Like, any number of problems are inevitably going to pop up. And I think just have faith that you're always expanding your toolbox, even when it feels the absolute roughest, you're getting so much better because of that.
Wow. That is so good to hear. And I think that does have to do a little bit with imposter syndrome too, is like, man, like, know that everybody is feeling the way that you're feeling. You know, everybody struggles with, I mean, you know, a lot of people at least struggle with imposter syndrome, and it doesn't matter if you're at the top of your game or just starting out. And I think that's so important for young photographers to learn and
learn from. Nerves are good.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Matt, this has been so incredible. I am so thankful that you were willing to sit down and chat with me today. I really, really enjoyed our conversation. Is there anything else that you want to chat about before we go, or any other tips that you might have? Anything you want to promote, anything coming up or anything like that?
I do have a new project I'm working on that's going to be coming out this fall. It's called When the Lights Are Bright Again, and it's a book that I'm working on that kind of documents this whole time of the pandemic and the shutdown and what it's been like for the theater industry. And I'm collaborating on that with an incredible actor named Andrew Norlin.
Mm.
And we are really excited about it. We have an incredible amount of like all stars lined up for this book and working on that right now. And the other piece of advice, and this is like the kind of advice that my parents gave me when I was a kid, and I just think it cannot be overstated, is just be nice to everybody on set. Like, be nice. Like, everybody on set matters. Everybody on set makes that final image. No person can do it on their own. So be nice to every single person, no matter what their role is on the set. I will never forget, we did a shoot for American Buffalo right before the shutdown, and Lawrence Fishburne came in, and he's, you know, an icon.
Yeah.
And the very first thing that he did is he walked around and to every single person, from catering to photography to videography to grip to, you know, PAs, every single person, he stopped and he shook their hand and said how great it was to meet them and how glad he was to be there today. And I was just like, you know what? That is it. That is what it's about. Be nice to people. Take a second to just, you know, acknowledge people's existence and thank them for the work that they do to help get the final image out there.
Wow. I don't think there's any better way to end than that. That is incredible. That's great advice. Matt, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. If you want to follow Matt on Instagram, you can follow him at MurphyMade. You can also go to MurphyMade.com to see some of the photos that we were talking about today on the podcast. Matt, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're amazing. I'm just so excited to be here, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for everyone who is listening, and we'll see you next week on Live from the Dark Room.